Japan is going ahead with its elections on Sunday despite the assassination of its former leader. Shinzo Abe was killed on Friday in the city of Nara. So will this affect the outcome? And what will it mean for Japan and the broader region? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Darin Abogeda. Japan's democracy will never yield to violence. Those are the words of the Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida as he promised to go ahead with Sunday's upper house elections after the assassination of the former leader Shinzo Abe. The nation of 125 million people is in mourning. Yet many candidates have continued campaigning, saying they will not allow Abe's murderer to get in the way of the vote. Japan's governing Liberal Democratic Party needs to cement its majority to push through a number of reforms started by its late leader. During his nearly 10 years in office, Shinzo Abe tried to revive the economy and made Japan a more assertive player in the Asia-Pacific. He was shot while speaking at a political campaign event on Friday morning in the southern city of Nara. Police are investigating if the gunman, named as 41-year-old Tetsuya Yamagami, acted alone. Abe, who is still a member of the lower house, had been campaigning in support of another candidate. So Japan's prime minister and Abe's ally says he'll continue on the policy track set forth by his predecessor.
I cannot forgive this dastardly and barbaric act which took place during an election, which is the basis of democracy. As the incumbent prime minister, I will not give in to violence and will defend democracy. I'll strive to further strengthen the Japan-U.S. alliance, carrying on the legacy of former Prime Minister Abe, who lifted the alliance to new heights.
Attacks against politicians in Japan are rare, but they're not without precedent. In 2007, the mayor of Nagasaki, Ichō Ito, was shot dead by a member of the Japanese criminal gang known as the Yakuza. 5 years earlier, a member of Japan's Democratic Party, known for his anti-corruption work, was stabbed to death outside his home. In 1960, an ultra-nationalist assassin killed the head of the Socialist Party using a traditional Japanese sword. And that same year, Shinzo Abe's grandfather and then Prime Minister Nobusuke Kishi was stabbed in the thigh but survived. Let's now bring in our guest. Joining us from Tokyo is Michito Tsuruoka, who's an associate professor at Keio University. In Cambridge, Tina Barrett, who's an associate professor at Tokyo Bay Sophia University and also a visiting fellow at Cambridge University. And in Kyushu, in the city of Beppu, we have Yoichiro Sato, who's a professor at Ritsumeikan Asia Pacific University. Welcome to you all. Thanks so much for your time with us on Inside Story and Al Jazeera. Michito, which of Abe's legacies will live on most prominently, and how do you think that it could continue shaping Japan?
I think Prime Minister Abe is to be remembered as someone very much dedicated to foreign security policy. So the strengthening of the US-Japan alliance, that was one of the things that Abe was very much focused on. But at the same time, I wanted to emphasize that Abe played a very big role in developing relations with Europe. So beyond Asia-Pacific region, beyond Indo-Pacific, was something that he did a very good job.
Tina, what's your take on this? How will the former prime minister be remembered? And you know, he was known by many for his Abenomics, which is try to get the Japanese economy moving. What will be the lasting legacy of that in particular, what he tried to do for his own country's economy?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's Abenomics that brought him back to the premiership in 2012 after he served a year not very successfully as prime minister 6 years before. And I think Abenomics initially excited a lot of people and engaged the Japanese population, but I think it's quite a mixed record in terms of what it actually delivered for the Japanese economy. A lot of the problems that have blighted the economy for decades, the wage stagnation, deflation, some of these things, and we still see them as being prominent issues in the upcoming election, you know, deflation has become inflation, but wage stagnation and problems in the real everyday economy still exist. So I think it's a very mixed legacy that Prime Minister Abe leaves behind.
We're going to get on to the subject of the upcoming elections in a moment, but first let me bring in Yoichiro Sato to tell us what you think the former Prime Minister's legacy is going to be. And my guest from Tokyo, Machito, was talking about the significance of all the work he did abroad. So I wonder if you can weigh in on that in particular and tell us where he really cultivated the most important relationships during his tenure.
Sure. Yeah, Abe was one of the rare strategically thinking prime ministers in Japan. And the reforms of Japan's security policy didn't start with Abe, but all those incremental progresses previously made have been packaged into one coherent strategic policy by Prime Minister Abe. And that would have been completed with amendment of the constitution if he didn't get into this tragedy. But unfortunately, his project is incomplete, and Kishida is going to have to face a tough job of succeeding Abe's legacy.
Let's look at the upcoming elections. Tina, you were mentioning them just a moment ago. Abe, of course, has been out of office for 2 years. But what sort of political implications could his killing have inside the LDP itself, the Liberal Democratic Party? And to what extent do you think the political landscape has changed for Japan's ruling party with this assassination?
In terms of the immediate impact on the election, I don't expect there to be a huge impact based on the tragedy that we've just seen. I think there might be some upsurge in support for the LDP, the ruling party that Mr. Abe was a member of, based on sympathy that people have for the party and the loss that they've suffered. But I think this will be more people who were planning to vote for the LDP anyway and somewhat ambivalent about whether they'd actually turn out to vote, might push a few more people to actually go to the polls. So we might see a bit of a surge in support for the party, but they were already on track to win a majority. Mr. Kishida has been doing reasonably well in the polls. And the opposition in Japan is very divided. I think there are about 12 parties in the opposition contesting the election. And some of those opposition parties, actually, in terms of some of the key policies that we've been discussing, in particular defense and reform of the constitution, might actually support the LDP were Mr. Kishida to go down that route and decide that he wanted to pursue constitutional reform. But I think Prime Minister Kishida has been quite vague on how committed he is to following that element of Prime Minister Abe's legacy. I think one thing we have to remember, obviously the two men knew each other very well, and Mr. Kishida was Abe's pick as his successor. But in the past year, Prime Minister Kishida has been sort of signaling that he actually wants to come out of the shadow of Mr. Abe. And I think the consequence of the tragedy will be that actually that will be easier for him to do. So we might actually see him asserting himself more as somebody who is following a sort of different path from his predecessor, who, let's not forget, was actually quite a controversial figure in Japan.
Right. Machito, do you agree with this assessment? And do you think that the LDP could witness a boost during the upcoming elections, thanks to some part by what's been described as a sympathy vote?
Yes, the degree of boost based on sympathy vote, I think it's quite uncertain. We don't know. But the even before the assassination of Mr. Abe, the government and the LDP, the ruling party, was set to win this election. So mainly because of the fact that the opposition parties are quite weak and divided, and also the people's the approval rating of the Kishida government has been quite high. So the way in which the government has been dealing with the COVID crisis and also the response to the war in Ukraine, and those are the things that the people have been basically supportive of. But in recent weeks, there have been more complaints and dissatisfaction among the people about rising prices, inflation. So the government, I think, is going to need to address these issues after.
But Machito, according to one of the latest polls that I've seen, in fact, the support for the government has been dropping. It was 66% back in May, and right now it's at 50%.
Now, it depends on the various opinion polls, but still, by Japanese standard, the approval rating for the Kishida government is still quite high. But the recent decrease, I think, has to do very much about the inflation and the rising prices. And that's why the government will need to address these issues. Yeah.
Right. OK. Yoichiro, so clearly Abe was a very influential figure as head of the biggest faction in that ruling Liberal Democratic Party. What do you think the impact of his killing will have on the party? Will it create a major political vacuum?
Not a vacuum. The LDP will remain a solid majority party, but at the same time, the intra-party dynamics will fundamentally change with Abe gone now. I think the faction leaders will resume their infighting after this coming election. And for Kishida, the margin of victory is somewhat important in terms of whether he can continue to reign over those factional leaders. The faction leaders are ready to withdraw their support when Kishida's popularity falls over various issues. Professor Tsuruoka just mentioned the COVID is re-rising now, and you know, this could make him unpopular, and the inflation is a big problem. And if the government talks about doubling the defense budget, as it has been discussed within the LDP, then that will make the party unpopular as well. And even to finance those extra spending, some are speculating that the consumption tax might be raised again, and those will be a killer items for the Kishida government if they have to talk about all those things.
Let's just look at some of the numbers for a moment, Yoichiro, because Kishida has set a goal for the coalition of the LDP and its junior partner to retain a majority in the entire of the upper chamber in the upcoming elections. The ruling bloc, he says, needs to win 55 seats to keep control of that chamber. Do you think that they'll manage to do so?
Sure, easily. And actually, that number is proposed deliberately low for controlling the expectation. And others will surely blame Kishida if Kishida actually wins only a simple majority.
Tina, give us a sense of what the upper chamber actually is, how important these elections are, and to what extent these elections are really seen sort of as a report card on the government's performance so far.
Okay, I think the elections themselves are very important. If we look at the past history of Japanese prime ministers, several of them, including Mr. Abe himself with his first administration, have resigned when the elections have gone badly for the upper house. So although it is the second chamber, it's very important in terms of people's political perceptions of the power of the prime minister. The second chamber actually is important to the legislative process in Japan. I mean, it has to approve bills that are going to become law. And in the past, I mean, Japan's had major difficulties politically when one chamber has been controlled by one party or one coalition of parties, and the other chamber has been in the control of other parties. So it is, I think, you know, fundamentally important to the smooth running of the government and the ability of the government to get their legislative agenda passed that the upper house has a majority for the ruling coalition. But as my colleague said, I think that's not really in doubt at all with this election. The question is, how big is the LDP's majority?
Okay.
And one of the reasons I think that, you know, former Prime Minister Abe was out campaigning in Nara and other places is that he was trying to ensure that the ruling coalition actually had a two-thirds majority, because that's the benchmark necessary in order to revise the Japanese constitution. So if, you know, the LDP or some members of the LDP, very much Mr. Abe, had that ambition, then getting a big majority in the upper house and indeed in the lower house is very important.
All right. Yoichiro, I mean, even if the LDP wins the election, do you think it's going to give the prime minister, and from what all three of you are saying, the LDP is going to win this election, but will he have a big enough mandate to actually carry out the reforms? We keep talking about the issue of inflation. Obviously, that's one that's on voters' minds.
The government winning the majority, I think, is very much certain. So the extent of win, yes, that's going to matter a lot, and that's going to affect the power base of Kishida within the party. And getting two-thirds majority only by the LDP and the coalition partner, New Komei Party. It's not quite easy. But the in terms of thinking about the starting the process of amending the constitution, the people are now thinking of adding two more opposition parties, which are supportive of the idea of changing the constitution. So the if you put all these four parties, the two coalition parties and the two opposition parties, and then the people say that we could make a two-thirds majority in both houses of the parliament. But I'm not quite sure to what extent amending the constitution is going to be a urgent issue following the election. I'm a bit skeptical about
that. Why are you skeptical? Because that was one of the goals that was pushed by the former Prime Minister, Shinzo Abe. And in fact, it's been retained by Kishida himself. So do you think this, be top of the agenda?
Yes, from the inception, the LDP has been talking about changing the constitution. Yes, that's very much part of the party's DNA. But in terms of a real policy priority, and yes, for some politicians who are deeply engaged in this issue, yes, their priority is very high. But for the general public, it's not quite a priority agenda. And also, the problem is that even in the LDP, there's no consensus on how to move forward, what to change, what not to change, and this is still a very controversial issue.
Michito, what about sort of foreign policy and defense? Because the LDP has been pushing for an increase in defense spending to reinforce its defense posture amid, you know, some threats from neighboring countries. How do you see that playing out?
Yes, the idea of increasing defense budget. Surprisingly, that the more and more people, the general public, support that idea. So there have been series of opinion polls about this, and a large majority of Japanese support the idea of increasing defense budget, which is quite new. So the biggest reason I think behind it is the war in Ukraine. So people are more concerned about the change of status quo by force, not only in Europe, but also it could happen in East Asia as well. So But in that context, the LDP has been talking about the raising defense budget up to 2% of GDP, but the current level is around 1%. So what they're talking about is doubling the defense budget.
Okay,
so it's a lot.
Let's bring in Yuichiro on that issue of defense spending and foreign policy. Do you expect any change going forward or more of the same?
I think the increase of defense budget will be rather incremental. It's not going to happen overnight in terms of political feasibility as well as fiscal feasibility. The government really has to work on financing increasing budget, not only for defense, but for the other various projects, including the senior citizens' pension reform, and also the corona pandemic related various subsidy expenses. And also Kishida talks about the so-called new capitalism, and he wants to subsidize many startups to revitalize the Japanese economy. Where does the money come from without raising consumption tax? And, you know, it's going to be a very hard decisions to make. And in the end, most likely, the government led by a weakening leadership is going to resort to incrementalism and immobilism as far as budget priorities are concerned.
I'm glad you bring up the issue of the new capitalism, because that is something that was being pushed by the Prime Minister. And he had, in fact, pushed back against the Abenomics policy of the former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. You know, this talk of a new capitalism, Yuichiro, how radically new a vision has it been, do you think?
It's very difficult to see. You know, he's looking at the United States, where you have all those unicorn companies and creating big new economies. And, you know, in his view, Japan should emulate that. But it's not sure whether the government subsidies produce those. And, you know, every time Japan wants to do something, the government tries to lead the process. But maybe that's a fundamentally wrong starting point if you're talking about startups.
Tina, let's just talk about the turnout and what's expected for the upper house elections, because turnout last time around in 2019 was about at 48.8%, which was the second lowest, in fact, in post-war Japan. How much appetite do you think there is for the election this time around?
I think, you know, generally turnout for the upper house elections is a bit lower than it is for lower house elections. And even they, you know, turnout has been trending generally downwards in recent years. So I would expect it to sort of hover around the 50% mark. Maybe the tragedy this week will prompt a few more people to come out and vote. Also, I mean, I think people are very much concerned about the cost of living issues, inflation, stagnant wages, the weakening yen, rising energy prices. These are all obviously bread and butter political issues. So it's possible in this sort of situation where people are feeling the squeeze and feeling that there needs to be a renewed economic direction, that this may prompt more people to come to the polls. But I think we're still sort of not expecting anything historically different from past elections.
What about the younger voters? Because according to reports, also turnout has been particularly low among younger voters in the recent elections, in contrast to some of the elderly voters that have come out to vote. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, partly it's because the elderly voters, it's a vicious cycle. Elderly voters are known to come out to the polls to vote. So political parties pitch their stall at the older voters who are more reliable. And therefore, a lot of the issues that are important to younger people are, you know, secondary when it comes to the platforms of political parties. I mean, Japan is an old society as well, so older people are more numerous. And you know, most of the political parties are led by older Japanese gentlemen who don't necessarily represent the younger people of Japan. I think it's very hard for them to sort of look at the parties and see themselves and their lives and their issues reflected in those who are putting themselves forward as the leaders of the political parties. But that's not just a Japanese trend. I mean, I think across the world, voting is always lower among younger voters.
Right. But Bichito, I mean, if you look at the LDP, it generally is viewed as a party of conservatives and continuity in Japanese politics. So do you think that's the mood on the streets right now, particularly in the wake of the assassination of the former prime minister? Or are people looking for a steady hand?
Yes, that's quite true. The people sort of tacitly trust the LDP policies, including the economic policy. So despite the fact that more and more people are dissatisfied with the current economic situation, but they still expect LDP to do the good job, because the opposition parties are not quite trusted and divided, too weak. So those who expect a more vigorous economic policy, they vote for the LDP. And that's the trend, not only today, but also the situation that has been there for more than 10 years, I guess.
Yuchiro, where you are, is it the same thing in Beppu and Kyushu? Are people just looking for a steady hand? And also, we're coming to the end of the show, but just tell us how much influence you think Abe will continue to have on Japanese politics, if any at all.
Well, the rural Japan has been dependent on the budget transfer from the central government, and the local politics is designed around this subsidy from the central government. But the young people who decide to stay in their rural neighborhood rather than moving for jobs in Tokyo or Osaka, big cities, they have to innovate, and they understand that they cannot depend on the government. But you know, they have to think hard in order to produce creative businesses in the rural area where population is declining.
Right.
It's not the easy task for them.
And just a yes or no, will Abe continue to, his legacy will continue to live on? Yes or no?
On economic policy, no, I don't think so. I already see signs that some of the Abe economic policies being reversed.
All right.
The yen gained value in the wake of the assassination. That was really surprising.
Thanks to all our guests for joining us on Inside Story, Machito Tsuroka, Tina Barrett, and Yoichiro Sato. Thank you for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, you can go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. Join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is AJInsideStory from myself and the entire team here in Doha. Thanks for watching. Bye-bye for now.